my friends. You're listening to the Dennis Prager Show. My motto, or among my mottos, as you know, is I prefer clarity to agreement. And in any event, I just aim for clarity. It's always been true in my own personal life. I've always said if I had been on the Titanic, God forbid, the thing I most would have wanted to know before I drowned was why it happened. I can make peace with tragedy, but I can't make peace with incomprehensibility. So that idiosyncrasy of mine is to your benefit because I try to explain what I can explain and have others explain what others might be able to explain better. Or at least come from an even greater knowledge base. So I want to talk about the economic situation in Europe and the United States with a man I have great respect for, a professor of economics at Carnegie Mellon University and a scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, Adam Lerich, who has been on the Dennis Prager Show previously. And, Professor, it's always good to have you on. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure, Dennis.
Do you just returned from Europe?
Yes, I did.
Where were you exactly?
I was in Berlin. I was in Paris. I was in Brussels. I was in Rome.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you, as I'm going to try to get to the as elementary and basic a series of questions as possible.
Okay.
And I'm going to begin somewhat at the end, perhaps, or in the middle, with this. As I understand it, French and other banks have loaned Greece great sums of money, loaned Ireland great sums of money, Portugal, the whole, what they called the pigs, right? Portugal, Ireland, Greece, Spain, and presumably now Italy. Now, why would I not be as angry at bankers as people that I don't respect who are in the Occupy Wall Street movement?
Well, first, Dennis, the amounts of money that European banks have lent to Greece and Portugal and Ireland are not that high. That's not the main issue. The main issue and the reason people are worried about Greece is not because Greece is important, because Greece isn't. Greece is only 2% of the European economy. The reason people are worried about Greece is that if they let Greece fail and there are large losses for investors in Greece, then people start worrying about Spain and Italy. And there, the amount of loans and exposures and investments in government bonds are very, very large. And that's what they're concerned about. No one has really been concerned about Greece at any time for the last year and a half because of Greece. It's only because of the possible effect it would have on other economies in Europe.
Okay, let us say, though, that Greece did completely default. Right now, the request has been made of banks to take a 50% loss on their loans, correct?
Correct.
Okay. How much money are we talking about?
Well, the amount of loans, bonds that are held by private investors for Greece is about $280 billion.
By private investors, you mean specifically banks?
Banks, yes, meaning not other governments.
Not other governments and not private individuals.
No, well, private individuals, but the amount of bonds held by private individuals
is minuscule.
Is very little.
Fine, okay. So, I'm sorry, what was the number you gave me?
Approximately $280 billion.
Which is not serious money, you're saying. And I'm not challenging you, I'm trying to just clarify.
And the amount held by banks of that $280 billion is only approximately $140 billion, half.
Who holds the other half?
Hedge funds, mutual funds, insurance companies, pension funds, securitization vehicles, distressed debt funds.
Okay, again, I got to go back to the beginning. Why would anybody? It may sound ignorant, but I'm willing to. Why would anybody invest in Greek bonds?
Well, that's the big question. Not only did they invest in Greek bonds, they were willing to lend to Greece at an interest rate which was no different, basically, than they lent to Germany.
Okay, well, that goes back to my first question. Why should I not have contempt for banks?
Well, you should have contempt for investors in general, not just banks. All foreign investors clearly made a major error in thinking that Greece was no different a risk than Germany or France.
Okay, so okay, I may drive you nuts this time, and I don't want to. I'm going to keep beating this horse. Aren't these people supposed to know more than Dennis Prager about finances?
One would hope so.
Then why don't they?
Well, because there was, when they created the euro, and this is going to go back now to more than 10 years, up until the day they created the euro, Greece paid much higher interest rates than Germany to borrow money. Right?
And what would they pay, in dollars or drachma?
In drachma or even in dollars.
Was the drachma internationally traded?
It was internationally traded. There were some adventurous foreign investors who bought drachma bonds.
On the theory that what? Olives would rise in value?
No, on the theory that Greece was paying an interest rate. I mean, the difference in interest rates between Germany and Greece before the euro was between 8 and 12% per annum. So the idea being, Greece is a worse credit risk. I get a much higher return to reward me for that bigger, for taking that higher risk.
Right.
Now, when they joined the euro, and this was the fundamental problem that is now coming home to roost, suddenly everyone said, aha, Greece is the same credit risk as Germany. And so the interest rates on Greek bonds fell from being 8% higher than Germany's to being virtually the same as Germany's. And the Greeks said, this is wonderful. Look at all the money we can buy at very cheap interest rates that investors are throwing at us. So we just keep borrowing and borrowing to pay for all these social programs that we want to help the people.
But why would somebody, if he's not getting a higher return on a Greek bond than on a German bond, ever buy a Greek bond and not a German bond?
Because he thought that really that the Union, the European Union, stood behind all its members.
Yes, I understand that, but I'm still. But you said that the difference was still minuscule. It's still dependent upon. I mean, there's got to be a reason why somebody would buy a Greek bond.
They thought the risk was really no different.
Yeah,
they were getting, instead of getting 3% on their German bond, they'd get 3.2% on their Greek bond.
So for 2.2%, they did it.
That's right, and even less. And they lent Greece huge. They lent Greece in total at the peak. $300 billion.
Okay, so now I'll ask you this question. Does this notion that you can be as irresponsible as you want because you're a member of the European Economic Union, is this the big problem?
That is the big problem. The problem is there are two types of monetary unions, meaning shared currencies. There are two structures that work, that can function and be stable. The first one is a union where each of the members, though everyone shares the same currency, uses the same money, each of the members of the union stands on its own vis-a-vis its creditors. That's the type of, that's what we have in the United States. Everyone in the United States uses the dollar. But if Illinois can't pay its bondholders, there is no responsibility of the U.S. Treasury or of Indiana to step in and pay for them. Right, that's a system that works. The other system is the system they still have in Germany, which is every one of the states and the federal government guarantees the debts of all the other states. So if you buy a bond of the city of Hamburg and Hamburg can't pay you, then the federal government of Germany and the state of Bavaria must step in and pay you. That also is a stable system. Because in the first system where each state stands on its own, investors will say, we will decide how much we will lend to each one of the states because each state is a different credit risk. And markets will discipline the individual members. In the second system, where the union, the whole group, underwrites the risk of every one of its members, then if the union is taking that risk, the union must set the limits of what each of its members can borrow and spend. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The problem in Europe is they had a union, they couldn't and still can't make up their minds.
About what?
Which type of union they want to be.
Well, I thought they did make up their mind. I thought they made up their mind they want to be like the German union.
No, they have explicit provision that says No member state can be liable for the debts of another member
state. Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. That's right.
So
you're right. They're both.
They're neither.
Or they're neither, yeah.
And a union that can't make up its mind is a crisis waiting to happen.
You're good. We'll be back if you have questions of this preeminent economist. 1-8-PRAGER-776, Adam Lerick of Carnegie Mellon University. Hello, my friends, and welcome back. I am doing my best to clarify for you and me, through the medium of a superb economist, Professor Adam Lerick, professor of economics, Carnegie Mellon University, and a scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, what the financial issues are about. Your original point vis-a-vis Greece was critical for my understanding. So the exposure of French and other banks is not the issue with a possible default by Greece, you're saying. It's, would this be the harbinger of much larger economies doing the same thing?
Exactly.
Now, but why exactly? If Greece defaults, why does that send a message to Spain or Italy?
It doesn't send a message, Dennis. Think of a confidence game, all right? If basically the only reason people lent to Greece at the very low interest rate you talked about was because they believed that there was no chance of loss because Germany would never let Greece default.
Oh, okay. So then it does send a message to Spain.
Not to Spain.
Oh, to the investors.
To investors.
Okay, so the investors will say if they're not going to bail out as they promised they would, Greece, then they wouldn't bail out Spain as they promised they would.
Well, they didn't promise they'd bail out Greece. They let people believe they'd bail out.
Oh, you're right, because the charter says that we're not responsible for your bad economic choices.
Right, but what they said in place, they said, we're not responsible for your bad economic choices. However, there was a very strict provision that said in the original treaty that we, the Eurozone, the group, will make sure that every member behaves responsibly, meaning that they had tests for fiscal deficit. You couldn't have a fiscal deficit above 3% of your economy. You could not have a debt.
Wait, you're kidding.
No, you could not.
But is there a single member of the European Union?
There are a few.
Wait, who has debt of under 3% of GDP?
Finland, Luxembourg.
Yeah, but nobody lives there.
I understand. Germany is very close.
Germany? I thought that Germany was Are we talking about percentage of GDP?
Yes.
Why did I think Germany was in the 70s?
In the 70s? I'm sorry. You're talking about debt to GDP.
Yes, debt to GDP. What are you talking?
Okay, I'm saying deficit.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
You had two tests. There were two tests to be in the euro. One was your deficit could not be more than 3% of GDP, and two, your debt could not be more than 60% of GDP.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Those are the rules. And the Eurozone said, we are going to make sure those rules are enforced. Anyone who violates those rules will be sanctioned and pay financial penalties for violating them. The markets took that as basically a performance guarantee. This is the Eurozone would ensure that every member of the Eurozone would behave responsibly. The problem is they didn't. Right? They never enforced the rules. That was the main problem. And rules without enforcement are worthless. Okay? Greece, in the entire period, Greece was in the Eurozone from 2000 on, never met any of the rules.
Wow.
All right? And to give you an idea, most of the countries have not met the rules either, including Germany, as you said. Their debt is above the 60%. So you have very few countries that have actually met the rules, and no one punished them when they didn't. And that's one of the main problems.
Okay, so the worry then, again, the worry with regard to Greece is, okay, Europe, you're not backing up Greece, then you may not back up any of the troubled economies, so we investors are pulling out.
We're simply demanding a higher interest rate to compensate us for our higher risk.
Right, which is why Italian bonds have risen.
That's right. The interest rates have risen. This is not, you hear the phrase frequently of contagion.
Yeah.
That there's this great fear of contagion. The concept of contagion, when it came to financial markets, was brought up, started in the 1990s, when we had the crisis in developing countries. And the concept then was that a crisis in an unhealthy economy could spread to healthy economies like a disease. And that these healthy economies would be attacked for no reason, no justifiable rational reason, because they were healthy, but they would catch the disease. And that was called contagion. Here they've changed the definition of contagion. Here the new definition of contagion is anything that causes the interest rates on any other country to rise, even if it's a totally rational assessment. Here we have a case that the Eurozone was functioning on a system where the interest rates on German bonds and Greek bonds and Spanish bonds and Italian bonds and Portuguese bonds were all the same. That meant the market believed, investors believed, that they were the same risk, and that meant they believed that the union stood behind all the members, in spite of the fact that there was an explicit provision of the Euro agreement that said we don't. Once you break that rule once with Greece, it's broken for all the other
countries. Wait, the rule that you're speaking of is intervening on its behalf.
No. The rule, I shouldn't have called it a rule. Once you break the illusion that Greece, that the union stands behind every other
right. Okay, that's right. That's what's contagious.
Then suddenly, rationally, every investor says, I thought that there was no risk of loss on Greek bonds. Therefore, I bought them at a low interest rate, and I bought Spanish and Italian bonds. Now I have a new piece of information. There actually can be a loss on Greek bonds. There actually can be a loss on bonds.
Well, hasn't that, forgetting the referendum in Greece, let's say Greece did accept the 50% haircut, as they call it,
right,
that investors will take. Isn't that enough to have the contagion you worry about?
Certainly. And that's why
losing half your money, I mean, it's worse to lose three-quarters of your money, but losing half your money is pretty bad.
Well, but that's why the interest rate on Italian bonds is 6.2%.
And on German bonds?
It's 1.8% now.
Are people buying Italian bonds, even at that rate?
Some adventurous people. Because...
Like Corzine.
Well, maybe like John Corzine.
It's you have to laugh, or otherwise you cry. We're going to take questions. I can't thank you enough. I really, he just gives of his time. I'm so grateful to him. And it's as clear as a bell. It's very depressing. I've got a lot more questions, but I'm sure you folks do. I really do. I really want you to leave this hour with clarity as to what is happening in Europe. And needless to say, I want to ask about the exposure of American investors in European economies, which we will do. 1-8-PRAGER 776, The Dennis Prager Show. Hello, my friends, and welcome back. Explaining Europe and eventually the United States and the connections is Adam Lerich, professor of economics at Carnegie Mellon University, scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, just returned from Europe. By the way, this hour is a good example of why we have Pragertopia, of subscribing to the show, because even if you hear an hour, let alone if you do miss an hour, it is so good to have it at your convenience to be able to listen to again or for the first time. This is just invaluable, I know, to my listeners, and I thank you again, Professor Lerich. So we're talking about and you've done a really fine job in explaining what the worry is with regard to Greece defaulting, because then the investor around the world says, oh, wait a minute, so Europe really is not bound to prop up every economy in the European Union. Is that a good summary?
Absolutely. And once they say that, just as I said, it's like a confidence game.
Right.
You've broken the confidence, and therefore everyone says, aha, if I could have a loss on Greece, I could have a loss on Spain.
Yes.
I could have a loss on Italy. And then I need a higher... This is a perfectly rational response. This is not an irrational action.
No, obviously. Let me then ask you, and I really do want to get to callers, but I want to understand, and I'm sure everybody listening does, why are we so entangled in what happens in Europe? Are we vastly invested in European bonds?
No. The U.S. banking system is not at direct risk of losses, large losses, from any restructurings of debt of European economies. What they're worried about is that if there is a major financial crisis in Europe, that will cause the global economy to slow down.
Okay, that's what I thought. In other words, people won't buy our products in Europe.
They won't buy our products in Europe. The Europeans won't buy Chinese products. The Chinese won't buy our products. There'll just be a global slowdown, sending us back into a large recession. And that's what they're really worried about, especially in an election year coming up in 2012.
Well, but it seems, off the top of my head, there's nothing America can do about the European problem.
Well, what they can do is what they've been trying to do, which is try to beat up the Europeans to do... The United States is a very simple solution to this problem. The Europeans should just print up enough money. Literally print up
enough money. Well, that's the Paul Krugman answer to America's problem.
Sure.
He wrote it. Print more money.
Right. Then that's the Ben Bernanke solution to our problem. Print up enough money just so that you can buy up every one of these bonds and keep the confidence game going.
That'll strike inflation paranoid Germany as just a perfect solution.
Absolutely.
Let's go back to the Weimar Republic and get Hitler again.
Well, that was the big struggle at the European summit 10 days ago that France wanted as a solution, not just France, Italy, Spain, all the weaker countries wanted the policy to be the ECB should just effectively print up enough money to buy up all the bonds as necessary and drive the interest rates on these bonds low enough that the confidence game will be restored. Germany said, no, that's not what central banks are for. Central banks are there to control inflation.
Right, exactly, because that's what I was not kidding, my dear listeners, that the Germans are more afraid of inflation than anyone else in the world because they believe that that is what created Nazism.
Dennis, you're right, but the issue is we are now two generations. There are very few people alive in Germany that actually witnessed
inflation. Oh, wait, so you do have sympathy for the print more euros?
Oh, absolutely not. That's absolutely the wrong solution. The Germans have been yelling for a year and a half, the solution to a crisis due to too much debt is not to take on more debt.
Yes, exactly. That's what people at AEI also scream.
That's right. People
at talk radio scream.
Yeah, but the goal here is there are others in Europe that say print up the money. And what they do is they point to the United States and say, that's what they did, that's what we should do.
It's very sad that that's what they say when they point to us. It's very sad. I promise to take calls. For Professor Adam Lerick, I'm Dennis Prager. I think we're going to talk to Professor Lerick about Prager University. He doesn't know it. I'll talk to him later. But I'm talking to him this hour, and it's been terrific. I may even replay this hour in some future, but not too far from the present date. It's just so worth hearing. And, all right, look, I promised that I'd take questions. I could certainly spend another few hours just questioning you alone, but let's do that. Professor Larrick is professor of economics at Carnegie Mellon University and a scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. And let's go to Bridget in New York City. Bridget, Dennis Prager and Professor Larrick.
Hello. Do you think that the bureaucracies at the EU have just failed miserably into being able to take into account the cultural differences between, say, your average Greek worker and your average German worker in terms of when they want to retire, the amount of leisure time they might want, and their whole attitude towards maybe honoring contracts and debt obligations?
Interesting question.
Bridget, I think you've hit on a very important point, which is Europe is very different culturally. They have different people with different histories, different values. The problem is not so much that, let's say, the Greeks don't want to work as hard as the Germans or want to retire at a younger age. The problem is the Greeks want to retire at a younger age, want to work less than the Germans, but want to be paid the same as the Germans. That is the fundamental problem of the Greek economy, the Portuguese economy, and even the Spanish and Italian economies, that the productivity of the people is not high enough to pay for the standard of living they want.
I had on a Greek author who writes for the Wall Street Journal. He's a Greek living in Greece, and he's very good. And he, Takis Mikas, and he said to me that, in fact, they have not fired one federal employee yet. Does that sound right to you?
Well, they've moved them around.
Okay, they moved them around. So, in other words...
Have they fired many? Many, no. They've cut their wages, they've cut their pensions.
Right.
But yes, there's a resistance. Dennis, it's very hard to do that when, as the government, the government is the Socialist Party is now in power. And their chief source of support is the public.
All right. Well, that's the whole. That's exactly why it's so horrible when you have large federal or state, in other words, government employees. You are both. What is it? At the hip, welded,
joined
at the hip. Exactly. All right. Let's go to some more calls. Let's go to Brian in Redlands, California. Brian, you're on with Adam Larrick and Dennis Prager. Hello, Brian. Okay, we'll get Brian in another lifetime. Fullerton, California, John. Hello, John.
Yes, sorry, Dennis. My question was the 50% haircut on the bonds. My understanding was, or I read or heard somewhere, that it was a 50% cut in the interest rate, not the principal.
No, it's in the principal.
It is the principal. Okay.
Yes.
Jeez, that is a big hit.
That's a real haircut. That's a crew cut.
And then if he could take some time to explain how governments are funded with debt, the sale of bonds, not particularly the United States, but anybody. I know we sell treasury bonds, but how does it work physically?
Well, physically what happens is you have a situation where the government spends more than it takes in revenue. In essence, it spends more on social programs, on medical programs, on government employees, on defense, and what happens is it collects money through taxes. Well, if they spend more than they raise they receive in taxes, they have to borrow, just like a household. If you spend more than you earn, you have to borrow to make up the difference.
Right, but the Prager household can't issue bonds.
Well, but do you have credit cards? Do you have mortgages, all those things.
That's fair.
All right. So what the government does to make up that shortfall is it goes and issues bonds and sells them to investors around the world. And they use the money to pay the difference between what they earn and what they spend. The problem with this is eventually people will stop buying your bonds. Then what do you do? And that's what happened to Greece. People stopped buying the bonds.
People stopped buying Greek bonds. Did Greece stop paying their...
No, they're just people suddenly woke up. Greece, what triggered this entire real crisis is that Greece one day stood up and announced, we had told you our fiscal deficit was 6% of GDP. Well, we didn't calculate it right. It's really 12% of GDP. It's double. And that brought the whole house of cards down. And it actually wound up being 15% of GDP. And so all
what, what is the American?
The American deficit is now about 10% of GDP. But the American deficit hopefully is going to start falling very little. But we're staring at trillion-dollar deficits as far as the eye can see. But the difference, Dennis, is that we have an advantage the Greeks don't have. Two advantages. One, we can print up dollars to pay off our debts. The Greeks can't do that because they don't have their currency. They don't have their own currency. They have the euro. And the second is the U.S. dollar is the world's reserve currency. And because of that, there are all these people around the world that buy our bonds, whether they like it or not, because they don't have a replacement.
By the way, is it not in our selfish interest that the French idea be implemented and that they do start printing a lot of euros?
Well, no, because then those euros will start flooding around the world, just as our printing of dollars has created inflation around the world. If they start printing up a lot of euros, it will create inflation around the world also.
Right, but then the dollar is not as isolated, as worthless.
True. Then what it is which is the worst of the two currencies.
That's correct. And then we all go to the one.
But the problem, Dennis, one of the key problems here is this. The people making the decisions, the policymakers, don't understand markets, don't like markets, and think they can control markets. And they're getting a rude awakening, a cruel lesson.
Oh, God, are you right? Oh, is that brilliant. All right, back in a moment with Professor Adam Lehrer. All right, we're going to have to do this whenever your time permits because it's so central to our understanding of world events. Professor Adam Lehrer, professor of economics, Carnegie Mellon University, and scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. So in a nutshell, if you were emperor of Europe, what would you do?
Oh, what should have been done before. Very simply, Greece should default and restructure its debt. The write-down necessary is even greater than the 50% we've discussed. Greece, even after this 50% reduction, is not going to be able to pay its debt. It needs a write-down closer to 75% of its bondholder debt. But, Dennis, the key is this. You should have established very clearly the rule. People that borrow too much money and can't pay their creditors, they default, and the creditors lose money. That's what happened in New York City. That's what happened in Orange County. No one said New York had to give up the dollar and leave the United States Monetary Union. But coming back, Dennis, I'd like to leave you and your listeners with what I call Lehrer's two laws of finance. The first law of finance is no one ever voluntarily takes a loss. And yet the Europeans kept trying to convince everyone that there should be a voluntary loss and voluntary acceptance. The second is you can move the losses around, but you can't make them disappear. The only question that's being asked right now and has been struggled with for the last year and a half is who's going to pay for the losses? Is it going to be the investor, or is it going to be the European taxpayer? And that's what they're struggling with still.
And your answer is the investor.
The investor should take the losses. He's the one who made the decision. I remember when Bob Rubin, when he was Secretary of the Treasury, reproached the Prime Minister of Malaysia about all the bad borrowers out there. And the Prime Minister of Malaysia said a simple thing. For every bad borrower, there's a bad lender. And therefore, the lender should take the losses.
Do banks really pay the price for their bad lending?
That depends. Should they? Yes. Have they in the past? Not really.
That's what I thought. You've been terrific, as always. I can't thank you enough.
My pleasure, Dennis.
Professor Adam Lehrer of Economics at Carnegie Mellon University. All right, that's part one of many parts I hope that we'll do together, even though he's been on a number of times. But this clearly has to be a regular feature, given the centrality of economic conditions right now to the world crisis. All right, my friends, we continue. You are listening to The Dennis Prager Show.